This is the Michigan Travel Show. I'm Dave Lorenz.
And I don't want to do this on my own, so I'm on my way back home.
They say that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Whenever you travel around the state of Michigan at any time of the year, you'll find beautiful places and things to see if you just lift up your eyes and look about you. Some of those pieces of art are literal paintings, and Michigan certainly is a place where you can find exceptional examples of the works of Picasso, Van Gogh, and Rivera at the Detroit Institute of Arts. In Saginaw, towering sculptures of plaster remind us of an artist who captured the spirit of entire cities. Art is not always of man's making. Sometimes nature itself creates its own version of art, and that fact is cast in stone at the A.E. Seaman Mineral Museum. And in Muskegon, there's an art collection of national status. We travel for the beauty of art next on the Michigan Travel Show.
I'm on my way back home.
Welcome to the Michigan Travel Show. I'm Dave Lorenz, and it's going to be a great show today. So I'm really happy that you have joined us today. You know, we've been talking the last few weeks about some of the things you could do indoors at this time of year. I know not everybody is into going outside at this time of the year. I love being outside up north on a ski hill myself. I'm a snow guy, but I also like heading indoors. And I love the fact that in Michigan, we are a state full of artists and art museums. We are full of them. We have so many great art museums. So we're going to really talk about some of our best art museums, some of our most unique art museums around the state of Michigan today on today's program. So let's get started. We're going to head over to Saginaw first for a very unique museum called the Marshall M. Fredericks Sculpture Museum. Let's bring in Janie Krynas from the Marshall Fredericks Museum. Janie, nice to have you on the program.
It's great to be here. I'm glad to talk about the museum. So thank you for having me.
I'm really happy you're with us today. We haven't talked about Marshall Fredericks in quite some time. And I've been an admirer of his work for a long time. I used to actually work at Meyer and worked at corporate headquarters. And Fred Meyer was just such an admirer of Marshall Fredericks that he purchased several of his sculptures. And today, of course, you can see them at the Meyer Gardens and Sculpture Park. I've been around that work for a long time. It's great that you can see not only the sculptures that Fredericks made, but so much more at your museum. Can you tell us about the museum and what you will find when you visit?
Absolutely. So the museum opened as a gallery in 1988, and it was really a way to feature Marshall's work, including his plaster molds, which the scale is just amazing to see in person. But you'll see over 200 works of molds and bronze sculptures, and it's really, really impressive to see in person. And it grew over time. So, you know, with an addition in a sculpture garden, we were able to increase how we could interpret his work, creating a sculpture studio. So when he passed, we received all of his tools and equipment, and you can really see the process of how Marshall created his sculptures, which is a really amazing part of learning about him and his work. I think it's so important. So it's really great to have that space. And then we have temporary exhibition gallery space as well. So it's really nice to be able to complement Marshall's sculptures. So it's a really nice thing to be able to have to reach the student population as well as surrounding communities.
Well, you are on the campus of Saginaw Valley State University in Saginaw. Did he live in Saginaw? Where did Marshall Fredericks live? And what can we learn about him when we visit the museum?
Sure. So Marshall did not live in Saginaw, but he did have a really important relationship, actually, with one of his former students when he worked at Cranbrook Honey Arbory. And her and her husband reconnected with Marshall in the 1970s, and they collaborated to put this gallery together on Saginaw Valley State University's campus, as Honey was part of the Board of Control at that time. So it was really, it made sense to be able to put that together here and display his work. But Marshall was born on Rock Island, Illinois in 1908. His family moved around a little bit. They ended up in Florida for a little while, and then they ended up in Cleveland, Ohio, where he spent most of his youth. He graduated from the Cleveland School of Art in 1930, and then he ended up going on a big tour of Europe. He studied in Sweden and really focused on concentrating, learning from a mentor, Carl Millis. And he really loved his work and was inspired by his work, and he got to spend a lot of time with him. And after traveling around Denmark, Germany, Europe, and North Africa, he ended up coming back to the United States and working with Carl at Cranbrook. So that was really a cool opportunity for him. He spent many years there and then ended up going into the armed forces in 1942.
He had a really distinctive style, and of course, you would know that style if you know the Spirit of Detroit, for instance. So you'll see many of his pieces when you visit. You have special exhibits quite often, and I know you have an exhibit right now. It's called Sketches to Sculptures. Tell us about that.
Yes, so this is actually an exhibition that was put together by a former director, and it's pulling from the permanent collection, but is really focusing on seeing his pencil sketches and presentation drawings to different corporations, and seeing that process of how he takes that early concept and transforms it into a three-dimensional sculpture. So it's really neat, and it really focuses on his inspiration of architecture, commemorative events that he's representing, spiritual concepts, and a whimsical aspect as well, using certain animals and things throughout some of the public sculptures that he created. Recently, we were at the Riverfront Conservancy opening the park on the river, and we had a tent there, and all of these residents were coming, and you know, we're like, do you know Marshall Fredericks? And they're like, well, I think I've heard the name. And like, do you know the Spirit of Detroit? And they're like, yes. And we're like, he made that sculpture. And they were like, oh my gosh. And they just loved, you know, learning more about the person behind the work. But you could just tell how important that sculpture was to the community.
And you can see more than 200 sculptures from his work, more than 70-year career, America's public sculptor, Marshall M. Fredericks. That museum on the campus of Saginaw Valley State University. To find out more, go to the website marshallfredericks.org. Our thanks to Janie Krynas for being with us today. We're going to head to the Grand Rapids Art Museum next on the Michigan Travel Show. It's the Michigan Travel Show. I'm Dave Lorenz, and we get to talk about the beauty of art all around the state of Michigan. When's the last time you were at the Detroit Institute of Arts? Really the shining example of what art museums should be in our country, in my example. It really is an unbelievable museum. I've been to museums all around the country, and I guess to some degree around the world. I've been to some. And I can't say enough about the DIA, about not only their collection, but maybe more so about the way they present the pieces of art so that, you know, just regular people, people who aren't, you know, really sophisticated with art, so that we can really understand the pieces and what was meant by the artists when they were putting them together. I just love the DIA. So we get to find out about what's happening there and about special programs in February now by bringing in Emily Bauer. She is the coordinator of family programs. Emily, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
As you could tell, I'm a big fan of everything you folks do over there. How long you been at the DIA?
I've been with the DIA for 15 years.
And how'd you end up there?
Well, I have a theater background. I did stage management for many years, and they were looking for someone to help with their public events. So I started in one day a week. Now I'm programming our family program series.
I can see how that could happen, because a lot of people might not know that there is a theater at the DIA in addition to all the gallery spaces.
Yeah, a really gorgeous theater that was part of the original building built in 1927. And we've kept it really well. Like, we've refinished it, and it's a beautiful place to see films, to see music. And we have Mosaic Youth Theater there three times a year.
Yeah, it's just such a cool thing. And you really have to take a lot of time to go through the DIA. It's not something you can do in one day. You should, you know, spend whatever time you can when you can go, and then, you know, go back again. And before I forget, if you're in the area and you're in the, is it the three-county area that there's free admission for people in the three-county area?
Yeah, so all of our residents of Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb County, they get the benefit of free general museum admission, which often includes our special exhibitions, and always includes our program series, with the exception of the film. It's the only one that has a ticket cost, but everything else is free with museum admission.
It's pretty cool. Now, we're going to talk about Black History Month in just a bit, but especially for people who have not been to the DIA, I want to talk about some of the pieces of art that people would really want to make sure they see. You know, I guess I call the most popular things. Can you tell us a little bit about the Diego Rivera?
Yeah, so that's a very powerful room to go into. So we walk in, it's this gorgeous room, and you're just surrounded by the art. And it really, you take a moment to just soak it in. And it's so connected with the area, with the Detroit industry. Like, everyone who lives here knows someone who works in a factory, probably knows someone who works in the Forge factory in Dearborn. And it's just so connected with the area. And it's also the place where we have our Friday Night Live concert series, and it's just a beautiful special room to see a performance.
I think it's such a cool room, and I've kind of stood there in the middle of that room and looked around and kind of walked the walls of that piece, because it's on all four walls, and tried to figure out, you know, what was meant by the various depictions on the walls, and it just tells so many stories. This kind of fresco style piece. It's really something else. And if that's all you did, you would feel totally satisfied by your visit. But there are so many other things to see. What other pieces should people look for and enjoy?
So we do have some special exhibitions going on right now. The Contemporary Anishinaabe Art, a continuation that's going on through April. And this is sourced through multiple artists who are Anishinaabek. And there's all sorts, like, there's furniture, there's painting, there's sculpture, there's canoes. So it just runs the gambit of media. And it's all deeply connected within their culture. And it's just a really beautiful exhibition. The interpretation, so all of the, the labels on the walls, they were done very closely with the artist. So you hear the artist's voice and all of the information that's on the walls. And that really is telling to the way that the DIA likes to present art. We really like to ground it in what is relevant to not only the artist, but also what is relevant to our visitors, and especially folks here in Southeast Michigan.
Yeah, it's just something else. Well, we do want to talk about the Black History Month because you have so many things going there. February is a big month for the DIA every year. And I know you have a lot going on there. So what do we need to know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have lots of stuff going on all the time. We have our Friday Night Live series, which happens just about every Friday, live music. We have films in our Detroit Film Theater series. We have family programs and art making and guest artist demonstrations. So there's always lots to do. And in February, of course, we really focus and highlight Black stories, Black artists. Coming up on February 7th, we have a puppeteer coming in from New York City who has a Haitian background, and he's doing a puppet story based on Haitian folklore. And we have the Elaine Locke Awards, which is an award that honors artists. And this year we're honoring Michigan native artist Allison Saar. That's on February 22nd. We also will have Elu playing in that beautiful room of Rivera Court on February 27th. And he is this really classically trained pianist. So he's very technically trained, but he also draws on these jazz roots. So he gets some really amazing things come out of, the strings on the piano.
I love the way you don't just, showcase paintings or sculpture, that you deliberately want to focus in on a variety of pieces of art, including music.
Yeah, for sure. Because, we are the Detroit Institute of Art, and obviously our collection is focused primarily on visual arts, but in our buildings, we feel that the arts are all interconnected and, visual arts impact the musical performance art and vice versa.
True.
So it's important to see all of them. And then it's also a way to, because folks who maybe aren't or feel like maybe visual arts isn't for them, they might feel more comfortable coming to see a concert. And then while they're there, they can walk through the galleries and then actually stop in front of a painting and, feel like they're seen, they understand what's happening, and they make these personal connections with the art and then also with the other folks who are in the room with them.
I actually love the idea of music while you're looking at art. It kind of augments the experience too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Any other specific activities that we want to be aware of for Black History Month?
Yeah, I think the only other thing I was going to mention is that we have a couple of guest artists. On February 28th, we have Judy Bowman with us in our art making studio, and she's going to be working with the visitors to make a collaborative collage.
Fantastic. So many cool things about the DIA, including, of course, Black History Month during February. But I mean, it's so diverse. European artists, most American big city museums feature European, but American, European, modern, contemporary, Asian, oceanic. Everything I can think of is there. It's such a great place, and people really need to check it out. And Emily, I'm so impressed that the DIA also offers free admission for folks in the three-county area. That's a great thing. So congratulations to you all. Thanks again for joining us. Emily Bauer, coordinator of family programs for the one and only Detroit Institute of Arts. And if you've if you're listening from like far away and you don't really know where the DIA is, it's right on the famed Woodward Avenue in what we call the Cultural Center of Detroit. So if you go to downtown Detroit, just, go opposite from the river, and you're going to find the DIA, and you're going to really enjoy that visit. Spectacular. We're going to go way up to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan to see art of a different sort next on the Michigan Travel Show. We're talking about art of all kinds on today's program on the Michigan Travel Show. I'm Dave Lorenz. And when you think about art, you might not be thinking about the museum we're going to be introducing you to today, next, here on the program. But, as we were putting this program together, I really wanted to make sure we included some of the Upper Peninsula museums for the program. And I was thinking art museums. There are some really good ones there. But there's a museum way up there in the Western Upper Peninsula, way up there in Houghton, that I really wanted to make sure that we brought in today's program, because there are a lot of ways to look at art, and natural art is still art in my mind. So you might not think about stones and minerals and things like that as art, but I do look at nature's art as art as well. So let's bring in John Jazak. He is director and curator of the A.E. Seaman Mineral Museum in Houghton. John, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Delighted.
You bet. And I'm sure you've never been introduced as like an art museum, because I'm sure most people wouldn't even think of it in that way. But I really do think, I was just so impressed in how beautiful the exhibits are that you have there. And nature certainly has its own way to produce some really beautiful pieces of art in its own way.
I absolutely agree. And you know, even though our museum really started off as an educational scientific institution, whether we're children or scientists, we're drawn to minerals first because of our beauty. We have a Beauty of Minerals exhibit. We have some even of our famous coppers exhibited as if they're natural art. And it really is increasingly recognized that the minerals are natural art and have become, some of them, actually quite expensive.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, it's funny. The first time I visited your museum, and I've been there many times bringing tour groups in, I thought, I'm going to a mineral museum? This is not going to take much time. And then when we got in there, it was hard to get the folks out because there's so much to see, so much diversity in your exhibits. Why don't we bring people through? And you mentioned copper. Why don't you tell them about that pretty big piece of copper you have outside?
Yeah, you know, we're here actually because of the copper, basically, and we're a unique place in the world, the world's largest deposit of copper as a natural metal. The mining was really stunning, and so in the early 90s, the scuba divers discovered this giant piece of native copper laying in Great Sand Bay, 30 feet deep in Lake Superior. And eventually we got permission from the state and coordinated with the Army Corps of Engineers and were able to have it hoisted out. It was put on display for a while at the Quincy Mine area. Now it's right outside our museum by our entrance to our parking lot. It's 19 feet wide. It's just spectacular to stand in front of and think, wow, this metal occurred this way and was retrieved off of the bottom of Lake Superior. It's estimated to be about 38,000 pounds.
I wonder what that thing's worth right now.
You know, even with the price of copper, you know, as a metal, it's quite a bit. But mineral specimens, and that included, are generally way more valuable as specimens and scientific objects than they are as ore.
Yeah, I would suppose, especially something that big, and that's just kind of like the opening of your visit when you visit the museum, the A.E. Seaman Mineral Museum in Houghton, part of Michigan Tech, right?
Yes, it's part of Michigan Tech. You know, the school started as the Michigan Mining School. Because of the copper mining, the state recognized they needed more geologists and mining engineers. And I was astounded to learn that the state passed legislation in 1861 to start a mining school up here, but the Civil War delayed it. So we actually had new legislation started in 1885, and they started buying minerals right away because they needed to use them for teaching. And Professor A.E. Seaman set aside some specimens for display and started the museum in 1902. And so we're almost at our 125th anniversary, which we're going to celebrate.
Well, and of course, there are a lot of different types of minerals and such in the Keweenaw Peninsula, but you exhibit minerals from all over the world. Tell us about some of them and from where they come.
Oh, sure. You know, we try and have a wide representation as part of the art and also teaching mineralogy overall as a science. We have the regional emphases for the Upper Peninsula, for Michigan, for the Great Lakes region. But it makes beautiful context also to compare them with some of the great minerals from around the world. And it seems there's these eras of great specimens being produced in different countries. When I was a child, one of the hottest places was from Mexico, and our museum has some spectacular specimens of wolfenite, lead molybdate mineral from Mexico. And then eventually Russia became an amazing producer of mineral specimens, and one of my favorite actually turns out to be a diamond in matrix we have on display, the diamond in the kimberlite rock that comes from Russia. Right now, one of the most amazing places for minerals is China. Just spectacular diversity and colors and rare minerals. We're building somewhat of a collection of the minerals from there, but some of the most spectacular, I think, are actually some beautiful fluorite crystals that occur there.
So. Well, you know, it's interesting because as you go through the museum, as you're looking at some of these stones or minerals or whatever, I kept on thinking that can't be a stone the way I would think of it, because it looks like a feather or it looks like, I don't know, a fiber of some sort. And this came out of the ground. Describe some of these minerals that you showcase, because they're so unique.
Well, one of the most surprising for visitors sometimes is when they see these perfect golden cubes, sometimes stacked up on top of one another like a geometrical piece of mm-hmm. art. And they're pyrite that come from Spain. And they're so perfect, even the edges and corners are sharp. People think, oh, they must have been cut and polished. But no, actually, they occur in a mountain in Navajun, Spain. And the trick is to get them out without breaking them. But it's spectacular what nature can produce. And actually, as a physicist, that really enticed me. Like, what's going on that the atoms would grow together in such a way to make these perfect geometrical shapes?
Mm-hmm.
And that's been fascinating to observers of nature for literally thousands of years, if not more. We have some giant pieces of quartz. One of them is almost a foot long for a single crystal. And again, sharp edges, transparent, smooth surfaces. Fascinating to see, you know, what else occurs in nature of these geometrical shapes. Some of them are really weird, and they have, like you said, these feathery textures. And copper likes to do that. Sometimes it forms those geometrical shapes. Sometimes it forms these feathery or plant-like textures. Sometimes they grow in what I think are also fascinating. They call them twins, because it looks like almost Siamese twins, two crystals that are mirror images of each other that grow side by side. And it's actually no accident.
You know, there are so many people these days that are going on the shorelines, especially in the Upper Peninsula, looking for agates or looking for what are called euperlites. And I'm sure you have those on display.
We do. And I'm just delighted to see the interest that they have brought to families and children. One of the important things that made this so exciting is the technology of ultraviolet lights. It used to be pretty expensive and difficult to have a portable ultraviolet light source, but now you can get them in flashlights, and they're pretty powerful. And so collectors take them scouring the beaches in the evening to shine the flashlight back and forth on the beach cobbles. And once in a while, you can find one that will glow under the ultraviolet light a beautiful orange color. And all kinds of patterns, from snowflake-like sparkles to bands and lines, and they're actually probably transported from Canada by the glaciers and then tumbled by the lake action, and they've been affectionately called euperlites, but they're a sodalite mineral in an igneous rock. And a couple years ago, we made a special display of some of our favorite ones of those, and so kids and families love to go in and push the button and turn on the ultraviolet light and watch them glow.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fluorescent minerals that is minerals that glow beautiful colors in reaction to ultraviolet light, and they occur all over the world and all kinds of different minerals. But as far as I know right at the moment, you know, these so-called euperlites from the Great Lakes area, especially here in the Keweenaw, are the main concentration of these sodalite cyanites.
It's really amazing, and you just find so many cool things there. It's the A.E. Seaman Mineral Museum. To find more, go to the website museum.mtu.edu. And I want to thank John Jazak, the director and curator of the museum, for being with us today. We're going to head to the Muskegon Art Museum next on the Michigan Travel Show. As we talk about art museums all around the state of Michigan, we get to come close to home for me here on the Michigan Travel Show. One of the really interesting things is that you can really find great art museums in all size towns. They don't have to be the biggest towns to have really great collections of art. And the case is certainly obvious when you go to the next art museum that we are going to visit, and that is in Muskegon, the Muskegon Museum of Art. Not the biggest town in America, but I'm telling you, they have a great collection. We're going to learn about that next by bringing in Kirk Hallman. He is the director of the Muskegon Art Museum. Kirk, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, Dave.
Really happy to be able to have you on. I think I'd mentioned to you as we were talking, getting ready for the segment, that I grew up spending my summers at the Muskegon Art Museum. I always enjoyed the classes that I would have there, and I have great memories of that place. It's changed so much over the years, but that permanent exhibit that was there way back then is still there. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of the Muskegon Art Museum and why it has some great pieces?
Yeah, it's a pretty unorthodox history. I mean, we're in our 114th year, and way back in 1912 it was opened. It's actually opened by the public school system here, Muskegon Public Schools of all things. They own the library next door. The public schools did, the public library, which is that iconic Hackley Library, all the granite. And when they designed it, they where the children's room is now, that was supposed to be an art gallery, so they started buying paintings to go in there, and they were buying them with a fund Charles Hackley, the lumber baron, set up to, quote, buy pictures of the best kind. Well, they hung them in there, and they thought, well, this doesn't really work in here and stuff, so why don't we just borrow from the fund, build an art gallery next door? And they did that, and it opened in 1912, and we've gone through several expansions since then, but I think the key here was this town, the size of Muskegon, under 40,000 people at the time, was the first town in the United States to make a purpose-built building for an art museum of a town this size. And they hired the first director from London, and they started buying contemporary artists like Whistler, you know,
yeah,
which are iconic names now. And in fact, I think one painting the director bought cost more than one of the local elementary schools that they were building. He got fired. School board kept on buying paintings, you know. So we still are and always have been an aggressive collecting art museum. But I think the key to building this collection is they were buying contemporary artists. When we purchased the Hopper, we purchased it from Edward Hopper. And other art museums said, this guy's unproven. Now he's like the number one iconic American artist. And so, you know, the previous directors all really had this eye for buying contemporary art. I mean, we can't afford to go and buy a Picasso. No museum can these days. So we still collect contemporary artists in the hopes that 50 years from now they'll become the next generation of, you know, iconic American artists. But we've done that for a century now, and it's really paid off into one of the most, I think, extraordinary collections of an art museum in the Midwest.
Yeah, when I think about it, most art museums in America really feature, well, mostly European artists. So to think about that, how many American pieces that the Muskegon Museum of Art features, it's quite impressive.
And, you know, we do have our share of French Impressionists and that kind of stuff. They went in various directions through the decades in collecting. So we're a little bit encyclopedic in some ways. We have an amazing contemporary studio glass collection. We have an amazing Renaissance-era print collection. We have an amazing Japanese print collection going back hundreds of years. So it's not just American artists we collect. And in the last couple of years with the expansion, we are now emphasizing women artists more than most art museums are in our exhibitions and our collecting because, you know, as they say, you take all the dead white guys off an art museum wall, there's not much left. So we're not the only ones. A lot of art museums are trying to, you know, rebuild kind of the
expand
the justice of this, you know,
you
and put them where their place should be, you know.
founded in 1912 in downtown Muskegon. You've just gone through a major expansion. Tell us about that.
Yeah, doubled our size. We started this back in 2018, and we were raring to go. And then, you know, we did about a, well, it wasn't supposed to be a $16 million capital campaign, but we had so many setbacks. We launched the capital campaign in March of 2020, and we know what happened there.
Yeah.
We started construction bids when we had the worldwide construction escalation. So it took a little longer than we planned, but the community fully raised the money, and we opened last February after 2 years of construction, and we've have about 19,500 square feet of exhibition space now, compared to only about 10,000 before. So we can get double the collection out. We've moved all our rotating shows, our temporary exhibitions, in the new wings, so it leaves a lot more room for our permanent collection, which is about 6,000 pieces for. But we added four new galleries, one large 5,000 square foot gallery where we can do those large summer touristy shows, and a couple new classrooms, which we really needed, new gift store, event space, and collection storage. So everything we really needed, we got through this expansion. And it's really, our attendance has tripled. It's just done everything we wanted it to do.
As you did when I was a young person, you offer educational programs. You still offer lectures, films, workshops. And I know you offer, you know, obviously a lot of interesting, you know, different types of exhibitions. What's coming up this coming year?
It's going to be another busy year. I mean, we designed this to be more diversified in our audiences and capture that big tourist crowd that West Michigan has in the summer. So now with our large gallery, we can rent national touring shows that we didn't have the capacity for. So we're starting off next month with in the big gallery with a basically, we're running a four-month Comic-Con. It's called POW, the Art of Comics. So we have original art going back to Marvel and DC. We have we're going to have a full Batcave. You can actually walk in, see the Batmobile, and Adam West's original Batman costume, Michael Keaton's movie props, production stuff. It kind of runs the gamut of comics. So that'll be great. Then we go off from that to our large summer show is basically a Disney show. It's going to feature not just Disney, but animation from about original animation storyboards and cells from about Snow White to around the 1990s. And what people didn't know about Disney was most all of the animators doing all the work were women. So the exhibition's called Her Story, The Art of Disney and Beyond, and that should do very well. And we may package that and tour it. And then in the fall, the big show is going to be, we're going to recreate, it's called Mini Art Tour Golf. So we'll have a fully playable 9-hole course that's pretty extensive. And each hole is based on a work in the permanent collection. So you golf through the collection. And that's great because it gets new people in the art museum who really might not have an interest going in their families. But then they go off to the museum and discover the permanent collection, and it gets us a whole new audience. Plus, it's fun. So those are the three big ones, and we kind of sprinkle in with a lot of fine art shows, a lot of student programming. We work with the schools a lot through the County Art Exhibition. So it's a lot of stuff. We kind of do about 15 temporary exhibitions a year, which is kind of nuts, but that's what keeps us going.
You're proving that art galleries aren't just paintings made by dead white guys anymore. It's an impressive plan you have there. Kirk Hallman, Director, Muskegon Art Museum, thanks for joining us today. And folks, that's all the time we have. Let me give you the website real fast, muskeganartmuseum.org. We'll talk to you next week here on the Michigan Travel Show. I'm on-